Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Harris Cherokee Resort. Find us online at caesars.com/harris-cherokee.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
As someone who talks about college football for a living, believe it or not, I really do love this time of year. Even though it seems like we're months removed from the start of the college football season, this time of year when you talk about this sport gives you a chance to talk about some things that you otherwise wouldn't really have the freedom to do so in what might seem like a more busy news cycle where you have news every day that you have to hit. You know, this is one of those times of year we're able to kind of post-signing day, pre-spring practice, kind of stretch our legs and theorize a little bit. And for those of us who really love college football, gives us a great chance to do that. Let me give you an example of that, and hopefully you have as much fun with this as I'm about to have. If we were to ask Georgia fans, let's say some sort of like survey of some kind, to weigh in and to list who you believe are the biggest threats to Georgia in winning a national championship, getting the college football playoff, but specifically here, winning a national championship. Which programs do you think are the biggest threat to Georgia with that in mind? And here's the names I'm thinking you would probably hear. You'd hear Alabama mentioned, obviously with good reason. Team that Georgia's kind of battled in the SEC championship a couple times, lost to this past season. You might hear LSU. That's a team that beat Georgia in the 2019 SEC championship game. You'd certainly hear Clemson. They've been a fixture in the college football playoff every year going back to 2016. And I think you'd probably hear Ohio State, a team that's been in multiple college football playoffs, won the 2014 national championship in the first year of the college football playoff. Those are the teams that I believe, those are the programs I believe, that you would hear most prominently mentioned by Georgia fans as the biggest threat to UGA eventually winning a national championship. The two SEC teams, Alabama and LSU, the two national powers, Clemson and Ohio State. And there is certainly some validity to the Georgia fans who would probably feel that way. I saw this at Athlon Sports the other day. They had the list of the most talented teams in the country for the start of the 2021 year based on the five-year average of recruiting rankings from the 24/7 Sports composite team ranking. And Georgia was number two on that list, and surrounding them in the top five were the four teams I just mentioned: Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, and LSU. Those are the programs I believe that Georgia fans kind of most commonly view to be Georgia's chief national rivals, potential impediments to winning a national championship. But I would suggest that another program should now be mentioned pretty prominently in a discussion like this, along with the ones that I just mentioned. And I'm bringing this program up for a very specific reason. I think when Georgia fans think of national rivals, competitors for the scarce four playoff spots that are available each and every year, I think Georgia fans should also take a pretty long look at Oklahoma in this discussion as well. Now, there are some reasons why looking at Oklahoma as a national rival, as a threat to the playoff spot that you hope to occupy come the end of the season, there's some reasons why that should kind of seem obvious. First of all, go back to 2017. The biggest win thus far of the Kirby Smart era came against Oklahoma in the Rose Bowl in a thrilling game that both teams, I thought, kind of proved themselves to be pretty strong programs. Georgia was just able to outlast them a little longer in that overtime period, gets the win, biggest win of the Kirby Smart era. But these two teams would also be connected again the following year. You remember we talked about this yesterday, Georgia getting excluded from the playoff as a non-SEC champion in 2018. One of the teams that got taken ahead of Georgia that year was Oklahoma. This was controversial. You had Kirk Herbstreit on ESPN saying that he thought Georgia was clearly one of the four best teams. And as I said before, we talked about that a little bit yesterday, and certainly a lot when it happened. There was the connection between those two programs then. But there was also a little bit of a connection between Georgia and Oklahoma this past season as well. The ties that have bound these two teams over the course of the last few years may be more significant than you realize. Let me go back to last December. Do you remember when Kirk Herbstreit once again and guys like David Pollack were going on ESPN television or ESPN podcast, and with the way that Georgia was playing late in the season, really bragging on UGA and really talking about the way that Georgia had seemed to kind of turn a corner late in the year once JT Daniels kind of emerged as starting quarterback? In fact, let me give you a brief taste of this from December. David Pollack, Kirk Herbstreit together from an ESPN podcast talking about the run that Georgia had been on late in the year. Let's take a listen to this.
Here's a question. Would you put that team over an Iowa State or a Cincinnati? You're talking about Georgia on just the way they're playing right now?
Because here's
like
the,
if
here's
you put them on a field, if you put them on the field.
Yeah, just if they played Florida again, there's no doubt I would pick them to beat Florida. I mean, I'm not saying that their defense would shut them out, but obviously they're healthier and JT Daniels playing quarterback. I just think.
No, I mean, if you're just looking at how teams are playing at the end of the year, obviously Georgia with Daniels in there has looked very, very different.
So that's audio there of Kirk Herbstreit talking to David Pollack from the ESPN podcast. But if I were to play that clip a little longer, here's what Herbstreit said after that. I just don't have the audio of this to say. What he just said about Georgia, oh, they've been different with JT Daniels. Herbstreit on the ESPN show back in December goes on to say the reality is that Georgia is actually like Oklahoma. Herbstreit says, I broadcasted the Oklahoma State game, and I went to the game thinking, this team's a lot better than they looked earlier in the year. Herbstreit saying that about Oklahoma and also saying the same thing about Georgia. He says it's basically starting over, and they lost a big lead against Kansas State. They lost in the fourth quarter in Ames to Iowa State, and the Texas game changed their season. He says it's really much like JT Daniels was for Georgia. It changed their season. From the Texas game on, Oklahoma's been a different team. So that's the third example in the last few years of Georgia and Oklahoma actually being more closely connected than some people might think. Playing each other in the 2017 playoff, Oklahoma selected over Georgia the 2018 playoff, and Kirk Herbstreit linking Georgia and Oklahoma together at the end of the 2020 season as two teams that were playing way better football by the end of the year than they were at the beginning. In fact, many of you remember Herbstreit going on TV the day that the Final Four was announced, the college football playoff teams, and Herbstreit essentially said about both Georgia and Oklahoma, these are both teams that you don't want to play right now. But there's actually more to all of this than this. My point in bringing up Oklahoma is not just to mention the ways in which these teams have been connected in the past, but the ways in which they're also kind of trying to do the same kind of thing as we head towards 2021. And this is where the conversation, I think, gets really important. A moment ago, I mentioned Georgia on the Athlon Sports list of the five most talented teams in college football. And you probably noticed of those five teams coming into the start of the 2021 season, Georgia is the only one of those five that hasn't yet won a national championship in the college football playoff era. LSU's done it, Alabama's done it, Clemson's done it, Ohio State's done it. And listen, that's not new information for Georgia. Dogs fans have been there before, and they are frustrated about that. And it's not my reason to bring this up to kind of troll and say, hey, you know, let's revisit this again. Everybody understands that. But what I think is important to understand is why it is that Georgia, among these like five most talented teams in college football, what those other programs have been doing differently than Georgia's been doing. And I think we kind of get this. We say this all the time on the show. It's about creating explosive plays offensively. It's about creating dynamic negative plays defensively. And if you do both of those things enough, you'll eventually be a national champion. And Georgia's trying to join the ranks of the true elite teams when it comes to doing those kinds of things. Let me give you an example of this. Of the five teams that I mentioned before, and by the way, we'll kind of throw LSU out of this because the truth is LSU's only been truly elite in one of those years. The year that it won it in 2019. But of the other three teams, if we assume the main playoff contenders this year, teams like Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, look at what these teams have been doing in recent years. Both Ohio State, it's about to be Alabama once Mac Jones gets selected, and certainly Clemson, have produced multiple first-round picks at quarterback. Georgia hasn't yet done that in the Kirby Smart era. Ohio State, Clemson, Alabama, also good at producing 1,000-yard wide receivers. Ohio State's had one the last 5 years. Clemson's had four. Bama's also had four. Also, Bama, Ohio State, Clemson have been good at producing those 40-plus sack seasons. Bama's had three of those over the course of the last 5 years. Clemson's had a 40-plus sack season all five of the last 5 years, including 2020, which was a shorter season than typically had been before. Ohio State's also had 40-plus sack seasons three times over the course of the last 5 years. Georgia hasn't had a 40-plus sack season. Georgia hasn't had a 1,000-yard receiver over the course of the last 5 years, and Georgia has yet to produce a first-round pick quarterback in the Smart playoff era, even though the three teams that I mentioned before have all had multiple ones of those. So if Georgia breaks through and wins a national championship, doing some of those things would seem to be a prerequisite. More dynamic when it comes to the defensive side of the ball, getting sacks, more explosive on the offensive side of the ball with 1,000-yard style receivers, first-round pick style quarterbacks. But here's where we get it back to Oklahoma again for a moment. very quietly Oklahoma, which is actually sixth on that ranking from Athlon Sports of most talented teams in the country to start the upcoming year. Very quietly, Oklahoma is trying to make its own strides joining that national elite. Now, when it comes to the explosive offensive stuff, Oklahoma's obviously had all of that you want. They've had the multiple first-round picks at quarterback. In fact, they've had, you know, two number one overall type guys. They've clearly had elite wide receiver play. But very quietly, did you notice what happened in 2020? Oklahoma took a major step forward defensively. Did you know that Oklahoma, and many of the folks that you talk to about college football may not be aware of this. Did you realize that Oklahoma last season was tied for the third in the country with 37 sacks? That all of a sudden Oklahoma, who's been kind of thought of as all the offense you want, not nearly enough defense to win at the highest level, pretty quietly over the course of the second part of the season that Herb Street described a moment ago as a team that got better as the season went along, part of the reason Oklahoma did that is they started looking a lot more like the traditional national elite programs with how they play defense, what they did with sacking the quarterbacks. 37 in a short season is actually pretty good, especially given the typical standard of defensive play there in the Big 12. So this is really the reason why I think Georgia fans ought to be paying close attention to Oklahoma. As Georgia works to match what national elite teams do, being as explosive as they are offensively, as dynamic as they are defensively when it comes to producing negative plays, a team just below Georgia on the so-called talent pecking order is trying to do the same thing. And offensively, they've been there. Oklahoma may be the most explosive offense in the entire country, at least traditionally year over year. But very quietly, they took a big step forward defensively a year ago, too. There's only four playoff spots. It's very hard to get one. They are scarce. Teams like Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson have certainly gotten more than their fair share in recent years. But as Georgia tries to wrestle and fight for that fourth, keep your eye on Oklahoma because they are trying to travel a very similar path, being as explosive and as dynamic as the very best teams in the country. What they have done, the rise over the course of the second half of last season, in some ways mirrors Georgia. But Georgia keeping pace with Oklahoma on both sides of the ball, I think is a crucial issue as the Dogs try to get back in the playoff again here for 2021. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. Good to have you with us. No matter how you get to us today, video, all kinds of platforms, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, no matter what video platform you watch us on, I really appreciate that. Podcast platforms all over the place as well. We love being with our friends on the radio in Athens on Athens Sports Radio 960. That's always a lot of fun. So basically, however you get to us, I'm just really, really thankful that you're here and really, really glad for Harris Cherokee Casino Resort making it all possible. You know, I know that as you start thinking about the weather's kind of nicer outside today, things like that here in the Atlanta area, you start thinking about a getaway. You want a getaway. And listen, there's no better getaway I can recommend to you right now than my friends at Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. Just a two-hour drive from Atlanta, whether you're talking about the original Harris Cherokee Casino Resort property or the Harris Cherokee Valley River. You can enjoy the great dining options, the wonderful shopping experience, the luxurious spa. The gaming floor has been completely reimagined to really take social distancing in mind, your health and safety of a paramount concern. It's just a great experience, a wonderful casino trip, and a lot of fun. The book is about to open up, the sports book there. That's going to be a ton of fun. So let me give you a website to go to so you can find out more information and so you can become a Caesars Rewards member and get really the best features and benefits associated with your trip. It's Caesars.com/Harris-Cherokee. That's Caesars.com/Harris-Cherokee. That will get you in touch with Harris Cherokee Casino Resort, and you can get that getaway you deserve here. And by the way, enjoy some sports betting coming up at a Harris Cherokee Casino Resort here very soon there as well. All right, I'm going to get Mike Griffith here in a moment. Before that, I want to do Around the Doghouse, and I kind of want to keep that theme we just mentioned going. That if you look at the very best teams in the country, Bama, Ohio State, Clemson, that kind of joined Georgia amongst the most talented teams in the country this year. What separates them? What have they done differently to maximize their talent more so than Georgia's done? As I said before, it's big-time offense, multiple first-round picks at quarterback, multiple 1,000-yard wide receivers, but it's also dynamic defense, sacking quarterbacks, multiple 40-plus sack seasons over the course of the last 5 years. That's what Georgia's trying to do, trying to get to that number for the first time. And if you really want to kind of highlight the value of sacks, the importance of all of this, I don't think that you need to look much further than the week one game Georgia's about to play against Clemson. We talked about Clemson on yesterday's show. And when you think about how that game can kind of set the tone for Georgia in terms of proving itself to be one of the best teams in the country, and along the way to matching the performance that the talent for the Dogs would suggest should be not just a possibility, but an expectation for UGA. How you do it against Clemson is going to really matter there. Let me give you a quick example. ESPN the other day talked about their way too early top 25 and the biggest question marks for each of those way too early top 25 teams. Clemson is ESPN's preseason number one. But this is the big question that Clemson has asked of it by ESPN. Can the offensive line improve? David Hale, the writer, says. He says, sure, the Tigers are replacing some big names at high-profile positions this offseason, but perhaps the bigger concern in advance of the 2021 campaign is the offensive line, where four starters are set to return, but he mentions problematic run blocking in the Sugar Bowl loss to Ohio State. Buckeyes dominating the line of scrimmage, David Hale says. So that's a big spotlight for week one against Clemson, where Georgia's obviously going to try to match the explosive offensive plays that Clemson quarterback DJ Uiagalelei is going to be able to produce. And JT Daniels have a big spotlight going on him into that game, utilizing George Pickens and all of the Georgia wide receivers. But making sure that you don't allow for the Clemson offense to have that much success, creating enough negative plays, sacking the quarterback, tackles for loss, something that Ohio State did very well against Clemson in the college football playoff, I think you don't have to look any further than that, than the key to victory week one against Clemson. So when you think about how Georgia looks more like the very best teams in the country, look no further than right there. Playing against Clemson week one, a team that's got some major questions related to its offensive line, if Georgia gets out, produces the havoc plays, sacks, tackles for loss there against the Tigers, not only could it be a recipe for wins, a win against Clemson, but could also be a big announcement about Georgia's plans for the rest of the season there as well. Before I bring on Mike Griffith here today, let me also give a shout-out to my friends at Kroger here too. Kroger's got some great things going on right now. I want to make sure that you're aware of that. All these winter meals, and listen, it's been cold here lately. You get bundled up at home. Nothing better than staying cozy inside on a cold night with some great food like pork back ribs, New York strip steaks, large cooked shrimp, all that stuff that kind of goes great on a winter night. Your winter meal planning prep can all be done right there at Kroger. So please stop by and see them today. Kroger.com also for more details on that as well. All right, we got a lot to do on the show today. A little bit deeper look at the rest of the SEC coming up before done. Very funny Gator hater roll call to get to there as well. So we will do all of that on the way. Great to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort today. And let's get ready to talk to Mike Griffith. We will, by the way, get Mike here coming up in just a moment. Get him squared away. And, of course, look forward to taking a lot of your comments later on the program today as well. I hope all of you are doing well, and hopefully I made good on the promise, by the way. I told you, I think some of our video audience a little earlier, that I'm going to start with maybe talking more about Oklahoma than you might possibly guess, but hopefully we kind of brought that home and obviously made that, you know, relevant for Georgia and kind of explained why all that mattered. So hopefully we kind of got that done. Is Mike ready to go? All right, he's ready to go too. So let's get that done as well. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. It's great to have you with us.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
We will slow to Mike. We will say hello to Mike Griffith here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. And Mike, I was just talking a little bit about the Georgia-Clemson game before you joined us, and I don't think there's any doubt about this. You've covered college football, obviously, for a long time, that when you've got the big marquee game to start the year, and for Georgia in its case, I don't think you can be more marquee than what Georgia and Clemson stands to be. I just think it changes the entire tone of the offseason. I'm sure for the players going through workouts and things like that, maybe it makes them a little bit more focused. But certainly for those of us who enjoy following the sport, it makes the conversation a little more exciting than it would be if you're playing McNeese State or someone like that. I love the energy that's already building, in other words, for this Georgia-Clemson game.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. It's really a treat to have a game like this. And, you know, it's fun, right? It's fun. It's a nearby rivalry. I mean, Clemson's 72 miles from Athens. You know, I think Atlanta, Georgia Tech Stadium, 70. I mean, this is a really close team. You know, they recruit up against one another. It'll be a while after the Clemson game, I think, before Georgia really gets tested again, if you look at next year's schedule. You know, they play UAB next, and then they play a rebuilding South Carolina team. And they're at Vanderbilt. We do expect Vanderbilt to show up because the game's in Nashville. And then they play Arkansas at home, Auburn, maybe the Auburn game. So it's really, the, you know, kind of got the Clemson game, maybe Auburn middle of the season. You know, you got Florida, I guess, down there in Jacksonville, and that's really your last challenge of the season. So, yeah, it's one of really two or three games on the schedule that I think is losable. And I think there's some value. There's a historical significance to the Georgia-Clemson rivalry. Just a couple years ago, I remember we were all surprised. I went down to Clemson for a spring game with Trevor Lawrence to do some stuff on him. And Dabo was talking afterward. He said, you know, we ought to play Georgia every year. He just said it out loud. I said, are you serious, man? I'm going to write that. He goes, yeah, go ahead and write it. And at the time, this game wasn't on the schedule. And lo and behold, 4 or 5 months later, Clemson and Georgia put this game together. So I'm excited about it. I'm excited to get to, we're going to do some Dog Nation coverage on Clemson this spring. I think Dog Nation fans want to know more about Clemson and about this matchup. It's kind of like almost kind of like a bowl game with about a five-month lead-up, though, instead of 5 weeks.
You know, Mike, when I was a kid, Georgia did play Clemson every year. And as a child of the 80s, I got to tell you, it was as big a rivalry as I knew for Georgia back then. I mean, obviously, Georgia-Florida's always been huge. But the Georgia-Clemson game, partially because of how good both the teams were, you know, Georgia won in 80, Clemson won in 81. You had thrilling games in the years that would follow. The Kevin Butler 60-yard field goal in 84 comes to mind, obviously. But I mean, the Georgia-Clemson game was as big a deal as anything back then. You know, obviously with the way that, you know, conference realignment kind of happened starting in the 90s, you started seeing these teams playing less frequently there at that point in time. But I can promise you, back in the 80s, this was a game that both programs had circled every single year. And I'm also guessing, as you think about 2021, even though Clemson's, you know, kind of validated itself with national championships, I'm guessing that side probably has this game against an SEC power circled just as prominently as Georgia does for this upcoming year.
Oh, absolutely. You know, like I said, Dabo brought that up to me. I mean, I've known Dabo since the 90s, and, you know, we just got to talking, and, I mean, he brought it up to, he initiated it. I wasn't me going, hey, do you think you're ever going to play Georgia? He initiated that. He dropped that on me. He wanted that out there. You know, this is something that Dabo Swinney wants. He wants competition. You know, Clemson, you know, as much as they get beat up for being in the ACC, they try to play good SEC teams, right? They played LSU. They played A&M, right? They played, you know, they play who they played Notre Dame before Notre Dame was in the ACC. So he's looking for this. This would be such a great annual rivalry home and home. Can you imagine BA 90,000 in Death Valley 1 year, 90,000 in Sanford the next to open the season as a traditional opener? And the beauty of a game like this with the college football playoff is that you can lose it. Georgia and Clemson could lose this game, and they don't have to worry about it ruining their season, right? Because Clemson wins the ACC. They're six-time defending champs, by the way. And if Georgia goes on to take care of business in the East and wins there, they're going. I mean, this to me, now this is the home and home that you put in cement and that everybody pays attention to, that every recruit in the Southeastern wants. Conference wants to be on the sidelines for a game like this.
Let me transition to a different topic. You wrote the other day about Carson Beck, and I think that Beck is one of the interesting figures around Georgia's spring practice because obviously he's going to make a push to be what I assume is the number two quarterback, with JT Daniels seemingly entrenched as the starting quarterback. And, you know, the competition there is intense given how healthy Brock Vandegrift may or may not be, and obviously Stetson Bennett, who has experience now as a starter. But in the case of Beck in particular, this is a player, Mike, that I don't feel like I know much about. I mean, obviously I know what he did in high school. Everybody follows that does. But in terms of his 1 year on campus for UGA, to me it's been kind of quiet around the Carson Beck front, both in terms of actual tangible reporting and just general rumor mill stuff there as well. I don't feel like I have a very good sense of what the first year for Beck was like on campus at UGA. Do you?
Yeah, you know, what I've, the intel that I've gathered, you know, and of course Jeff, you know, has good intel and we have sources as well, and I talk to people, is that Carson's got his head in the playbook. This is a guy who is all in right now. This is a guy who's very focused, very athletic, very strong, a very agile athlete. A guy that won over that freshman class that he came in with. He's got all the leadership traits and all the characteristics. B.A., the question is, what is Georgia looking for in their backup? And I think it depends on the circumstance. So Stetson Bennett is a veteran guy. He came in last year. You know, things were going wrong. It wasn't just Dwan Mathis. The snaps were bad. The receivers were running the wrong routes. Arkansas was off to a good start. And Stetson came in and kind of steadied the ship and got the ball rolling for Georgia last season. Won a couple of good games. Came from behind to beat Tennessee. Impressive against Auburn. And then teams kind of figured it out. Like, okay, here's what he can do. Here's what he can't do. And it got a little bit tougher. But you know that Stetson Bennett can manage the football game. You know that he's adequate. Not a great quarterback, but an adequate quarterback. Good enough to beat Clemson? I don't know. But good enough to beat most everybody else on the schedule? Probably. So do you go with the trusted hand, or do you go with the higher ceiling, right? Lower floor, higher ceiling. See, Carson Beck doesn't have that experience. And last year, it really hurt Carson Beck not to have spring, more than the other quarterbacks, because they've been through spring drills. You know, brand new coordinator, different level of football, even though Carson picks things up quickly, didn't really get a chance to prove himself. And then in the fall, when he did have opportunities, their eyes were on Jamie Newman and JT Daniels. Those were the guys that were splitting the number one reps when the team started to work together in late July and through August until Jamie left after that first scrimmage, which was scrimmage one at the beginning of September. So Carson, you know, and then it's like, okay, how much time do you really have left on the clock before the opener? So I think you make a great point, and I think this spring is absolutely pivotal. And my takeaway is this. I don't know that Carson comes out of this as the clear number two this spring, but if it's 2A and 2B with Bennett and Beck, I think Carson should stick around because I think he could be the long-term guy. I think he could be the starter in 2022 if JT Daniels decides to go pro after next season.
Yeah, I mean, here's what I would sell Carson Beck on if I was the Georgia coaching staff. I would point to two guys in the SEC from this past season, Kyle Trask, who waited his turn at Florida and was eventually rewarded for that. And I would say the same thing about Mac Jones, who waited his turn at Alabama and was eventually rewarded, you know, for that. You know, would Beck potentially emerge in 2022? I don't know. I mean, you know, I think that Brock Vandegrift is stiff competition. I think it'd be a fun battle between these two to see kind of how it goes there with that. But if Beck would allow things to play out, or really any player that kind of fits his profile, when you see the way that patient quarterbacks rewarded this season, Mac Jones, by the way, is about to be a very rich guy, and Kyle Trask may be there as well. These are two guys, in Jones' case, that I don't know that I ever thought he'd start a game for Alabama, and yet he probably, you know, finishes as the best single-season quarterback Nick Saban's ever had. That sometimes there's something to be said for patience, and there's something to be said for, you know, kind of letting things play out as opposed to trying to control outcomes. If I was making a pitch to Beck, I believe that's the pitch I'd probably make.
I think you're right, and I think that's probably the pitch that's out there, right? Now, Carson Beck is no dummy. He sees Brock Vandegrift is going to be there, and Brock is a talented guy with strong arms who lifts a lot of weights and dominated at the 1A level. So we don't know how he's going to adjust yet. That's a factor in this. You know, and if you're Carson Beck, in the way I tell fans to look at this is it's so black and white. It's either best for your team or worse for your team. But when we're talking about these players, they're people. And pretend that they're your son, or pretend that they're your friend or your brother, and what advice would you give them? Because a guy like Carson Beck, B.A., if we're going to be honest about this, this is a guy that could start somewhere else this season. And he's got to decide that Georgia's really worth that wait. Now, Kirby Sell is, you know, come to Georgia where you'll get better coaching, and you'll get better quality reps. It'll be better for you in the long term for your career to stay at Georgia than to jump ship and go somewhere else. Well, what are some of those ships that are out there? That's the question. We don't know his options. You know, we know that Lane Kiffin gave him his first offer when Lane was at Florida Atlantic. Would Lane want him at Ole Miss? Obviously, Ole Miss doesn't need a quarterback this year, so you rule that out maybe. You know, we know that Loxley was at Alabama when he was an Alabama commitment. He's at Maryland now. Is he telling Carson that he could start right away at Maryland this season? I don't know the answer to that question. We know Gus Malzahn just took over at UCF. I look at Beck, and some people disagree, but I see a little bit of Bo Nix. I do. I see that athleticism, you know, stronger arm. But, you know, if you're Gus Malzahn, do you make a run at Carson Beck? And Carson, you go back to Orlando, you know, just a couple hours from home? And then the nightmare scenario, everybody holds their breath. And Centel tells me he doesn't see it. But, you know, what about the Gators, right? So there's a lot on the table here. And if you're and Carson's got to feel it. Now, I'll give the kid credit, B.A. When he came in, I don't think he knew that Jamie Newman was going to be added as a grad transfer in January. He darn sure didn't know that JT Daniels' plane would land in May, right? And I bet you if you would have asked him, he would have thought he would have gone into a game before Stetson Bennett. So the kid has stuck around and showed some faith. And Kirby has said he likes what he's seen from Stetson. He thinks he's improving, right? But when push comes to shove, there's going to have to be some hard decisions made in the quarterback room, in the running back room, in the offensive line room this spring. And I do think you'll see some improvement in those groups.
Yeah, some of that with Beck's probably more speculation than I'm willing to probably entertain, but I understand the point that you're trying to make. Let me say one more thing about quarterbacks before we get there. I think you brought up a pretty good point a moment ago that situations can kind of dictate this number two situation. You know, for instance, obviously nobody wishes an injury, but if Daniels were to get hurt early in the season, that's when I do think the value of Stetson Bennett is probably the most paramount, because he's obviously been a starter before, and, you know, having, you know, to go out and play a game without the guy that you expect to be your starter, the value of Bennett probably comes through a little bit more early in the season. But as you get towards the later stage of the season, let's say it's a traditional competition between the incoming freshman Vandegrift and the guy who's been here back to, you know, to maybe kind of put himself into an heir apparent spot behind Daniels after that, I think the longer the season goes along, the more you could potentially lean on a Vandegrift or a Beck. But in the early going, if Daniels, for whatever reason, was forced to miss some time, and obviously no Georgia fan wants that to be true, but if it was the case, in the early stage of the season, the presence of Bennett as a guy who has started and won games in the SEC before, at that point in time, Georgia may be glad to have that.
Yeah, you know, to me, it's kind of like the middle reliever versus the stopper, right? You know, if you lose JT Daniels and midway through the fourth quarter of the Clemson game and you're up by three, you're probably going with Stetson Bennett. But and depending on the injury, right? You know, if you lose your quarterback for a length of time, do you hit the reset button and go with the higher ceiling? That would be my question. And you know, you hope that scenario doesn't come to pass. And
right.
Certainly JT Daniels has been through enough already. I think you're going to see a more mobile JT. I know the line's going to be better, and he's going to be much better with his quick throws. So I don't anticipate that happening. But if we're talking worst-case scenario, I kind of think that you'd go with Beck. And again, these are all things being equal. We don't know how this is playing out behind closed doors at Georgia. So just to be clear, those practices are closed. Georgia's not talking. I saw a minute ago somebody said, oh, my gosh, we don't want you to talk about Clemson. Talk about Georgia. We'd love to talk about Georgia. Georgia doesn't want to talk, okay? They're not picking up the phone. You know, they're not raising the shutters. They're not answering the door. So we're going to talk about people that want to be talked about that are practicing right now, Clemson and other coaches that will come on shows and things like that. We don't really know, though, B.A., what's happening. And I don't know that G-Day is exactly the best read on it either, because those situations are kind of manufactured. You know, who's on whose team. So, to me, this is a big mystery. I think our speculation is healthy, though, you know, especially when we talk about what would be the better scenario, which quarterback would be best as the two. People are always fascinated by it. And certainly with Carson Beck, this is a guy we heard a lot about. Jeff told us a lot about Carson Beck, read a lot of stories about how talented and how great he was. And so our appetite is wet, and I think we're all eager to see what Carson Beck can do in the spring game.
Hey, I want to make sure we finish with this, because I think this is a pretty interesting thing last night. Very big performance from Xavier Wheeler, triple-double for him. That's kind of a historic feat for Georgia basketball, certainly in the SEC. Georgia also gets a win over a good LSU team, and a little bit of revenge for getting jobbed by the officials a little earlier this season there in Baton Rouge. But, you know, Mike, I've said this before that, you know, the next step for this Georgia team is just to simply play games that matter. I don't know that with Anthony Edwards last year, Georgia did that enough. This year, even though it's been kind of a step forward, step back from time to time, I would say that they continue to kind of at least stay, you know, relevant and a part of the conversation. Maybe not quite a bubble team, but kind of on the bubble of being on the bubble to a degree here.
Yeah.
They've certainly been more entertaining, I believe, this year. And last night to me was another example of that. So I really think that Georgia basketball is maybe somewhat quietly here, but taking a little bit of a step forward. And what they did last night against LSU for me is certainly an example of that.
Yeah, I think you put it right. A bubble of a bubble, you know, and we have seen incremental progress made. I mean, they just finished a stretch, probably, you know, in the commentators, maybe the most difficult stretch in the country. They just played five consecutive NCAA tournament teams, and they went 2-3 in that stretch. They took care of business and won their two home games, and they lost on the road to Alabama, Tennessee, and Florida, so three very good teams, and beat Missouri and LSU, two very good teams at home. What you're seeing, though, and the reason they're fun to watch, is these guys don't quit. You know, whether they're down, you know, 30 to Alabama or down 18 or, heck, last night, up 20 on LSU. These guys are giving you the full 40 minutes. And Xavier Wheeler has everything to do with that. And you're right. The triple-double is rare. I didn't even realize how rare. Yes, it was the first in Georgia history. You go, oh, my God, well, Georgia's terrible. Yeah, well, North Carolina's only had two in their history. Duke's had four. You know, so there's 29 in SEC history, period.
Yeah, the bottom line is it's just hard to do that in a 40-minute game. That's, I mean, that's the issue. And an NBA game's 48 minutes long, so you got 8 more minutes to collect stats, theoretically speaking anyway. I mean, part of the issue with this is it's just hard to do, you know, that kind of stat work in 40 minutes of play.
Yeah, and Sevier is just, you know, I don't know how many people have followed him. He's a good guy to get dialed into, though. But this guy's a floor general in every sense of the word. He's a lot of fun to watch. Tumani Kamara, the kid from Belgium, he's had 7 double-doubles this year, B.A. That leads the SEC, right? Justin Pryor leads the SEC in steals. You know, they swept Ole Miss, another team that's on the bubble. You know, they've done some really good things, beating Auburn, beating Kentucky. Those are good coaches, Bruce Pearl and John Calipari. You know, even on their bad days, those are, you know, guys that, you know, have Hall of Fame resumes. So Tom Crean can coach. There's no question of that. The only question is the recruiting. And I really believe that the connection to Anthony Ant-Man Edwards is really going to pay dividends, because Ant-Man progressed here. Now, you might look at the record and you're like, oh, they're only 16-16. Yeah, but Ant-Man learned to catch and shoot here. Ant-Man learned to move without the ball. Ant-Man maintains positive relationships with Georgia. He's a walking billboard. A number one overall pick is going to speak on behalf of Georgia basketball and the value of playing for Tom Crean. I can't think of a better advertisement than that. No offense, because I think you're a pretty good, you know, when you say something, people believe it too. But I'm going to give Ant-Man the nod when it comes to talking to college basketball prospects.
Yeah,
so I think the future of Georgia basketball is brighter than maybe some people realize. And if you watch him, you'll see the growth and you'll feel proud about the way these guys play. They play hard. They don't quit.
Mike, great to talk to you. Thank you for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort today. Certainly look forward to reading you a lot at dognation.com in the days ahead. And, of course, getting a chance to speak to you back here on our program again very soon as well.
Thanks, B.A. Have a good one.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Speaking of Ant-Man, we haven't really talked about the viral dunk at the end of the day. I can't show it to you, you know, streaming video will not permit me to violate that NBA copyright. You can share it on Twitter. I just can't show it here on the show, but many of you by now have seen it. You're talking about thunderous. I'm talking about as good a dunk as you're going to see. Nice to see Ant-Man doing that. Nice to see Georgia kind of connecting itself to that news cycle a little bit there as well. I know the UGA basketball accounts are pretty active throughout all of that. And listen, I grew up a huge college basketball fan. I probably follow the sport less than I used to. Admittedly, I don't have the kind of time to follow all sports the way that I once did. But I'd love nothing more than for Georgia to be a relevant, you know, story in college basketball. I'd like for this team to show up and play defense a little consistently, a little bit more night to night. That's probably a fair criticism of this team, that they have erratic defensive efforts, at least in my eyes. But I think this team is more fun to watch, better, even, by the way, than the Ant-Man team a year ago. There's something about the way this team is kind of gelling and clicking with each other that I think is actually fairly entertaining. So hopefully the best still yet to come for Georgia basketball. Certainly a big step in that direction last night when it comes to what goes down, you know, goes down there with against LSU. Hey, quick shout out to my friends at Pella Window and Door of Georgia. I want to make sure you are very aware well of this. New website for our friends at Pella Window and Door. Of course, they help equip your house with energy efficient windows and doors. That's a very important thing in terms of keeping the energy inside your house. I got a great offer for you there right now as well. Between now and April 1st, you can get 10% off an entire project or no payments, no interest for 12 months on those window and door projects. Really good stuff. But here's what you need to be aware of. New website, PellaofGA.com/DogNation. When you want to go get the best savings, the best opportunity, the best way to reach them is at PellaofGA.com/DogNation. Also, the number you can call, this is a great way to get in touch there as well. 678-638-1496. That's 678-638-1496. That'll get you in touch with Pella Window and Door of Georgia. All right, I want to transition here to our SEC through. And so I've talked a little bit about the last couple of days on the big questions. I mentioned the big question facing Georgia's week one opponent Clemson a moment ago. Big question facing Georgia. I like this stuff at ESPN.com, looking at all these very big questions. Alabama's the number two team on the list for ESPN, the way too early top 25. And they say, who replaces the offensive stars? And I would suggest that's not the biggest question for Alabama, because we have seen Alabama replace offensive stars. Tua Tagovailoa at one point in time was thought of as a historic quarterback, as kind of like the Alabama version of what Tim Tebow is viewed for being at Florida. And yet, when you look at the way that Alabama replaced Tua this year with Mac Jones, Can anyone say that Alabama had difficulty replacing that offensive star? Same thing when it comes to there's no more Henry Ruggs, there's no more Jerry Jeudy, these great wide receivers. Jalen Waddle gets injured fairly early in the season. Who replaces those stars? Well, Devontae Smith goes out and makes himself the star of all stars on his way to winning a Heisman Trophy. Same thing at running back. You cycle from, you know, all these guys year after year. Najee Harris steps up and has a very good season. The big question for Alabama is not who replaced the offensive stars. Alabama has replaced offensive stars over and over again, never more significantly than what they did a year ago. But that doesn't mean that Alabama doesn't have a big question. And I don't think anybody's talking enough about this offseason. The big question facing Alabama is, can you effectively replace Steve Sarkisian as offensive coordinator? On paper, it seems like Alabama's done a great job of that. You bring in Bill O'Brien, he was a head coach at the NFL level. Even bring in a guy like Doug Marrone to run your offensive line seems like a pretty big coup. Marrone himself, also a former NFL head coach. So certainly in terms of taking steps towards making hires, you got no squabble with how Alabama's gone about that. But folks, really take some time to dive into those numbers, to dive into those stats about just how good Alabama was offensively a year ago. Bama's been good on offense for a number of years under Nick Saban, but it's never been as good as it was a year ago. And listen, Steve Sarkisian's bounced around for a little bit, probably given an unfair hand as Falcons offensive coordinator, forced to run the Kyle Shanahan offense when he first took over here. That's no good spot to be for any offensive coordinator. So maybe we never really got a chance to see Sarkisian at his pristine best the way that he was a year ago. But it is not a, what's the phrase I'm looking for, a fait accompli. It is not an obvious thing that Bama easily replaces Steve Sarkisian, even with someone of the credentials of Bill O'Brien, because of how good Sarkisian was a year ago. I mean, in some ways, this could be a little bit like what LSU dealt with in the absence of Joe Brady as its passing game coordinator. That someone who is just so good that the stats alone are very difficult to replicate by anybody else. So I think that's something to keep in mind there. By the way, Texas A&M, number 6 on the ESPN, way too early top 25. Obvious big question for them. What is life going to be like without Kellen Mond, they ask there. Obviously, Haynes King is the guy that gets a lot of the attention there for the moment. But one of the reasons why I have on this show tried to keep Texas A&M in the offseason conversation is that it is certainly appropriate to ask questions about Texas A&M at quarterback. We all understand that. We all get that. But the other thing that you have to kind of keep in mind here is that what's going on around A&M at quarterback is so much more solid than it was probably at any point in time in the Jimbo Fisher era, and certainly predating Jimbo Fisher, where A&M kind of always had that pungent whiff of Big 12 style finesse, not running the football very well, not playing very good defense. That has changed in the last couple of years under Fisher. A&M ran the ball very well a year ago. Defensively, I would put Mike Elko near the top of SEC defensive coordinators. So all of a sudden, Jimbo, who has tutored a number of first-round quarterbacks before, whether it be as a coordinator going back to his time at LSU, the time that he spent there at Florida State as both coordinator and head coach, this is a guy who's produced a lot of first-round quarterbacks. All of a sudden now, he gets more time to develop the heir apparent to Kellen Mond, who was okay, probably not great, but sometimes good is good enough, and that was the case for A&M a year ago. I think A&M is a real player on the national stage here this year. A very, very significant player. You get down to Florida, which comes in at number 16 on the list. Same question for Florida as was asked by Alabama, this time about replacing that offensive firepower. I do think that's a much more relevant question for Florida than it is for Alabama, because I think that Florida has less of a track record in doing that. Remember, go back to Dan Mullen's time at Mississippi State. Nick Fitzgerald is supposed to be the heir apparent to Dak Prescott. It's supposed to be this seamless transition to quarterback. But it never really happened for Fitzgerald there working with Dan Mullen there at Mississippi State. So transitioning from what was obviously a successful offense a year ago, even during a four-loss season, doing that with new faces in key places when it comes to the Florida offense, I think that's an absolutely relevant question. And we'll go ahead and wrap things up by making that your SEC through. All right, so a very fun version of our Gatorator roll call today. First of all, we got a lot of these good ones coming in, so continue to send yours in, and we'll give you a chance to be honored here with the Golden Shoe, which goes out in honor of someone who gives us a very funny Gator hater, whether it's something from your house or your Photoshop editing skills, whatever it is. A guy who's made a strong run as of late is our buddy Ben Green. I mentioned a moment ago, four-loss Florida. Ben Green on social media kind of giving us a very funny Dan Mullen Photoshop with a little bit of a Game of Thrones tie here. It says, claims king, loses four games. And there is some of that for Dan Mullen Florida fans right now. I have never seen a team more proud of a four-loss season than Florida fans are for this past year, although admittedly they did beat Georgia. But that's why we have revenge on our mind when it comes to those lousy, stinking Gators. How about our Gator Hater Countdown? 248 days from right now, Georgia heads to Jacksonville, gets a taste of revenge. We'll see you tomorrow, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort.